Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And is there a doctor in the house? Yes, Congresswoman Nan Heyworth, ophthalmologist and freshman Republican from Mount Kisco and points north and west of there, back with us mostly to talk about the House Republican proposals for Medicare and Medicaid, part of Paul Ryan's overall debt reduction plan. Congresswoman, thanks so much for coming back on WNYC. Good morning.
My pleasure, Brian. How are you?
Good, thank you. Now, last time you were here, you were holding your cards close on whether you would vote for the emerging budget compromise as it was being negotiated. You said you wanted to see the numbers. In the end, I see that all the Republicans from the New York State delegation voted yes, though 59 other Republicans from around the country voted no, many of them freshmen. Want to tell us why you ultimately supported it?
Yes, Brian. And what you're referring to in that case is actually the continuing resolution to fund the operations of the federal government through the end of the 2011 fiscal year.
Correct.
Different from the budget that is, in fact, the budget plan that we ended up voting in favor of on Friday in the House, as you know, Paul Ryan's Path to Prosperity budget. But in the meantime, yes, we did pass the continuing resolution in the House. I was among the Republicans who voted in favor of it because I wanted to see that point passed and established that we could have particularly our Defense Department appropriations assured through the remainder of the fiscal year. That was one of the aspects that that came into play there. And so that we could consolidate the gains that we had made in behalf of our constituents and the American public to continue the path of fiscal discipline and move on to the decision about the budget.
The larger budget decisions to be made now that the overall Ryan plan is out, et cetera. Do you have any buyer's remorse about this continuing resolution now that the analysis has come out that says after you strip away all the gimmicks and one-shots and everything, it's actually like one-third of $1 billion in actual cuts?
No, I don't. Brian, and I understand, I've read the analysis, the pieces, the meta-analysis, if you will. The federal budget, as you can imagine, is a complex thing. And so it is true that there are some cuts that we make that are will actually take hold when planned spending for out years, so to speak, is affected. There are some more immediate cuts that will be appreciated, the effects of which will be appreciated or experienced more quickly. Obviously, far fewer than the ultimate number. That's an ordinary part of any of these plans or laws, if you will, these bills that we pass. So it's not surprising. And the key thing to keep in mind is that we have been endeavoring on the House majority side, on the House Republican side, to get the most substantive, most substantial budget reductions, spending reductions that we can. We have been limited in our reach in that regard because, of course, the Senate majority has disagreed with us on the approach that we should take. And I would like to see more. I would like to see more restraint. We have many more opportunities. That, of course, is where the Ryan budget comes into play, obviously. That is an excellent plan for our future that does responsibly deal with deficit and debt.
Congresswoman Nan Heyworth, my guest on WNYC, freshman Republican from around Mount Kisco and north from there along the New York-Connecticut border, west to around Middletown. What's your opinion about those who voted no? Are they unrealistic or are they a more Tea Party faction of the GOP? Or how would you characterize them and yourself after this divided vote?
a shared aspiration among all the members. I wouldn't presume to speak for everyone else, but I can tell you that certainly it's my very strong impression that there is a shared aspiration among all of us to achieve the greatest advantages for our citizens that we can. We want to return working capital to the pockets of our citizens. We want to return it to the citizen economy where it actually does grow jobs. So we all hold to that. And those of us who voted for this continuing resolution did so fully acknowledging that it did not go nearly as far as we would like it to, or that, and more to the point, that we think is maximally beneficial for our citizens. But this, in the view of people like me who voted for it, or certainly in my own view, speaking for myself, was in the context of facing a Senate and a president who have a different philosophy of the role of federal government and size and scope, this was the best arrangement agreement that we could do now. And it is better to move that ball, if you will, to a first down than to lose ground completely aiming for that touchdown, let's say. So I felt it was the right thing to do.
Now let me move on to some of the things in the Ryan plan, particularly the Medicare and Medicaid aspects, and drawing obviously on your background as an MD, mm-hmm. in addition to everything else. Medicare, as you know, is still so popular among seniors who are on it. This yes. is part of government that those who use it thinks actually works for them. Mm-hmm. So would you be saying to future seniors, and we should point out and make sure everybody understands this wouldn't kick in for anybody who's over 55 right. under this proposal. It would be those 55 and younger. Are you saying to those 55 and younger that today's Medicare is just too good to be affordable?
It's not a matter of being too good to be affordable. It's a matter of not being affordable. We all aspire to good or great. We aspire to have all Americans have access to the quality and the choice and the innovation that marks the best of American medicine uniquely in all the world. The way in which Medicare is currently configured and the way in which it will not change, as you've rightly pointed out, Brian, for those 55 and older at the time of enactment, if you will, of this budget. The way in which it's currently administered is not sustainable. We need to bring sensible control of the cost of medical care into our world as medical consumers and as providers, as prescribers. And you're correct, sir. I do have experience as a physician in the 16 years of practice. And it is very important for doctors and their patients to be aware of and cognizant of the cost of the choices they make, so that they can and they will. It's been shown in areas of the country that have programs like Healthy Indiana in the state of Indiana with health savings accounts for the state employees and for their Medicaid recipients. When people are aware of what it costs to do certain things, they will make sensible choices. Right now, we don't have an incentive that is based appropriately in the consumer world. We don't have incentives to bring those costs under control. And yet we are faced with a situation in which those restraints will be forced upon the public through mechanisms like the Independent Payment Advisory Board for Medicare, which is part of the Affordable Care Act. So we want to give Americans that power to do so. And by choosing their own insurance plan with the premium support that Medicare under a revised proposal would provide will allow them to do that.
But are you saying then ultimately to seniors, you're using too much medical care? You need to be more selective about what health care you use. And if there's more cost to you as individuals down the road for signing up for plans with more benefits or for out-of-pocket expenses when you actually use medical care, that's going to make our medical choices as a nation more sensible. Because a lot of seniors would push back on that and say, you mean, what do you mean? I only go to the doctor when I have to go to the doctor. I don't want to go to the doctor.
Brian, it is strictly a matter of empowering the consumer and the provider, the doctor, the prescriber, to make choices in a universe of spending on our health care that will, you know, have to be addressed rationally. We've made a lot of advances in medicine. We have a lot of ways in which, if we are engaged in the process, we can make decisions about our health for the long term that we need to start making under our own steam rather than having those decisions forced on us by the federal government if it is the
Obama
default.
Plan. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is the hard truth that both parties, I think, have to figure out how to say honestly to the American public and deal with the fallout, which is that someone has to ration health care for seniors. And either Medicare will do it based on its best practices review under the Obama plan, or insurance companies will do it based on their profit motive. But we've all had our bad experiences with private insurance denying our benefit claims. So I guess the question comes down to, why should we trust them more than our democracy, if you will, to decide how seniors' health care should be treated most humanely and cost-effectively?
Part of the challenge, really, Brian, is that the universe of choices has been limited in this country. As I'm sure you know, one example is that we actually have a limited selection of insurance options in a state like New York. Insurers in New York have to honor a menu of more than 50 mandates, and that makes the cost of insurance in New York for those of us who aren't in large purchasing groups nearly prohibitive. It's a very, very expensive proposition. So the number of insurers that will enter that kind of a marketplace becomes limited. Most people, given the choice of spending their own dollars on their care, based on the experience that we have had in various places in the country with health savings accounts, is that people will purchase more limited so-called catastrophic policies, and their routine care and medications and diagnostic procedures, things of that sort, will come from their own tax-protected dollars.
Right. So, although that's for younger people. When you're talking about seniors, are you saying there should also be no set of minimum standards, let's say, that all private market insurance plans would have to offer seniors?
Not necessarily, no. But I think those standards, no, not necessarily at all. But I think those standards have to be very sensibly devised, and we need a new, there's no question about it, Brian, we need a new level of engagement by consumers as they plan their care over the course of a lifetime, just as we currently approach our need for long-term investments or for life insurance. There are ways in which we can account for those events or eventualities that are more predictable as we age, and for those that would be unpredictably highly costly, therefore we have insurance to, you know, cover that kind of eventuality. But there are certainly ways in which we need to think, all of us, about how we try to assure as much as we possibly can that we achieve a healthy old age. And that's part of it. People talk a lot now about wellness and prevention. I think they're right. These are things that we have to think about in the universe of consumer choices. And one way to incentivize that is to put the people who hold these policies, American citizens, in greater charge of accounting for their health care. And if they have tax-protected dollars with which they can do that, I think they will be far more motivated to be involved and engaged in ways that we need to be.
Congresswoman Nan Hayworth, freshman Republican from Westchester, parts of Westchester and North and West. One question about Medicaid and the Ryan plan, and then one question about the budget before you go and the negotiations over the deficit. What would happen to Medicaid in times like these if it became, instead of a personal federal entitlement for poor people, the block grant to the states that's being proposed? Times like these where we have high unemployment, so Medicaid rolls are expanding as we have more poor Americans. Under the current system, the federal government is obligated to pay part of the tab for each new person who qualifies. Under the Ryan plan, the states would have the same fixed amount to work with in their block grants, no matter how hard the times and how expansive the rolls. Why wouldn't that mean higher state taxes or more uninsured unemployed people than the current system?
I think, Brian, this has to be seen in the context of a broader view of our economic policy in general and our economic health in general. In a state like New York, we have had an economic climate that has discouraged enterprise, that has driven small businesses and taxpayers out of the state. That does make it hard. You're absolutely right. That does it tends, number one, to accelerate economic bad times because there is a certain spiral effect there. And all you need look at is the fact that we're losing two congressional seats in New York State, whereas Texas, with a much more favorable tax structure, is gaining four seats. And there has been a migration of people in all socioeconomic classes out of these high tax states. So you're right. There is an economic climate that that is unfavorable, and that will, yes, assuredly increase the burdens for those who find themselves now in a new situation of need. So it becomes incumbent upon the states, and Governor Cuomo in New York State has certainly started that path. It becomes incumbent upon the states to take in hand their own fiscal policy, so that they are strengthening the economic base that puts people to work, so that they have the dignity and they have the income that they need to care for what is important in their lives. And it really does fundamentally come down to that. You know, how do we assure that 14 million Americans who are currently without a job right now, who need them, will be likeliest to find employment? Well, we do that by making sure that we have that we allow working capital to be in the citizen economy and not commanded to nearly the extent it is by state and federal government.
In other words, less money to Medicaid. You have to do Medicaid more efficiently, is what you're saying.
Go ahead. Yeah, no, exactly. We do need to, you need to be incentivized to have efficiencies. And so this is a broad stroke philosophy or approach. It is true, but the smaller strokes really do have to exist within our states and communities.
Last thing, we have about a minute left before you go. What do you think about the prospects for a debt reduction agreement, a big grand bargain agreement? Of course, the S&P downgrading of U.S. credit to a negative outlook is a warning shot. Can it bring the two sides together?
Brian, I certainly hope so. We stand ready in the House Republican Conference to be responsible and to take on difficult decisions. They need to be made. The American public is, I think, eager and ready for us to make those decisions. That's what the 2010 election meant. And I think it is public engagement that is going to make the difference. And however our listeners here feel about the issue of how we should approach the debt ceiling, I think it is wise for them to express their opinion to the holders of public office who will be involved in these decisions, from the presidency right on through to members of the House of Representatives. If the public insists that we pursue a course of greater fiscal discipline, they can persuade the Senate and the President. In the House Republican Conference, we are well aware of that, and again, always eager to hear. But I think we really do need those who favor fiscal discipline for the sake of our future, for the sake of opportunity for people who desperately need it now. We need the public to get involved and put pressure on the Senate and the President.
Freshman Congresswoman, New York Republican, Nan Hayworth, we always appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Manhattan Borough President Scott Stringer on the difficulty of locating farmers markets in the inner city neighborhoods. And a candid call in after that for anyone who has ever cheated on your taxes. Why did you do it? Some say they'd feel like a chump if they didn't cheat. Did you read that article in the Sunday New York Times? All that plus a 12 noon online chat about taxes and the budget coming up. So stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.